Okay, good evening, gentlemen. This is our fourth class in Maseches Makos. We're going to, even though we got to the top of Gimel Amud Aleph, we're going to begin from the bottom of Beis Amud Beis by the two dots. It'd be a good starting place. And the goal would be to get to the second Mishnah today on Gimel Amud Aleph. Would be a nice goal, and I think it's maybe doable. Look at my definitive way. I think maybe it's doable.
Yeah.
Okay. So we had five statements. What?
Do you know where in the English we're going back
to? Oh, so it's going to be 2B, probably 3 or whatever. The last 2B that's there. The one before 3A.
2B4.
Yeah, it's 2B4.
It's 2B5.
Okay, whatever. It's right there. Well,
how does it start?
It's three lines from the bottom. Mishum Rabbi Akiva Amru.
Okay. What is Rabbi Akiva's reason?
Yes, okay. Yes. My timer. Okay, we got that?
2B4 at the bottom.
2B4 at the bottom. I would recommend, you know what I'm going to do tomorrow? I'm going to bring little clips.
So well, I had my marker.
Oh, okay, good.
But then the rabbi went back.
Okay. Okay, fair enough. Okay, so Rabbi Akiva, let's go back to what Rabbi Akiva said. We said there were five cases where the unique situations of Adam Zomamim. Remember, let's get our heads back on track. False witnesses, they enact that a judgment goes unlawfully and we catch them in time. We give them the punishment. So now there's exceptions to that. So Rabbi Akiva said the statement of that they don't pay, Adam Zomim don't pay by their own admission. Okay? So, and the simple case of that would be, if let's say they testified, they lied in a court, and then they were found to be liars, but they weren't able to give them the final punishment that's due to the Adam Zomim. They flee before, they go to another court, they confess to another court. Rabbi Akiva says, at that point when they confess to what being Adam Zomim, we do not make them suffer the punishment they were going to get. That was Rabbi Akiva's statement. So now, we are now three lines to the bottom. My time with Rabbi Akiva. What is the rationale of Rabbi Akiva? Must be Kesavar Knasu. He holds that the concept of Adam Zomim is a knas. It's a punitive measure and not a monetary measure. And we have a rule. Uknas ein mishalim al pi atzmo. And knas is never paid by a person's admission. The more famous way of describing it is modet beknas, admitting a knas is potter, you don't pay. That's a rule through the shas. Everybody says that rule. Everyone denies that rule. If you admit to a punitive fine, you know, and the court, and you weren't made guilty of it first, you are potter of that. And Adam Zomimim is a punitive fine, which the Gemara is going to explain why. Amar Rabba. Rabba says, Teda, I'll prove to you that it's a punitive fine. Sharelo Asumasa. Adam Zomim don't ever really do anything. All they do is talk. Right? And nothing even gets accomplished because they're proven liars before it gets enacted. They testify someone should get the death penalty. Besson says the guy should get the death penalty, but then they're proven false before we kill the guy. And what happens? We kill these guys. So even though they didn't do anything, they got to get killed and they get paid. Now that can't be monetary. It can only be understood as punitive. So you see, it's a punitive measure. It's a knas, and therefore, a knas, if they will run to another court and confess, they won't have to pay. Amar Rav Nachman, a separate statement now. Rav Nachman seems to be saying his own new proof. Teda, I'll prove it to you as well. Shrei Maman Biyad Balam. The money is still in the original owner's hands. He never had to pay it. Umishalmim and the Adam Zomim have to pay what they wanted to take away, but they never took away anything. If they lied, this guy stole $500. Right? And let's say they lied. They said this guy stole $500. So now he would have to pay $500. But we catch them beforehand. What do we say? You got to pay him $500. Yeah, but the guy didn't lose anything yet. So that's a proof. That's a fine. Right?
That's proof. It's a fine.
It's a fine. Right. Just proving it's a fine. That's all. We're just proving that it's a fine. So now Gemara, now we're at the top of Gimel Amud Aleph. Gemara is saying, wait a minute. What did Rabbi Nachman tell us that we didn't know in the line beforehand? Rabbah told us a reason. Rav Nachman seems to be saying a brand new reason. It's the same reason. My new, what's this reason that Rabbi Nachman is bringing to say, well, you see, the guy doesn't, they didn't make the guy pay any money. The guy still has his own money and they still have to pay. And what's the rationale of that? It's the same reason, the law is so miser, because they really didn't do any action. At the end of the day, they didn't, the fact they couldn't take money away from somebody means they didn't do any action. Heinrich Rabbah, it's the same sort that Rabbah said in the line before. So what do you tell me, Rav Nachman? Gemara says, Ema, we should read the line before to say, V'chein Amar Rav Nachman. And Rav Nachman also says the same thing as Rabbah. So then it's not a problem. The way it was worded originally, it seemed that Rabbah gave a reason, Rav Nachman gave a reason. You think it's a separate reason. But it's really the same reason. So it's the same reason. What are you doing? So therefore, add the word V'chein. You understand it to be read. And Rav Nachman says the same type of thing. Okay. That's where we got up to last time. So now, we have a new statement that you'd think is unrelated to what we just did, but when we get to the end, it will relate back to Rabbi Akiva's statement. Okay. Omar Rabbi Yehuda Omar Rav. We're on the second line at the top of Gimel Omar Rav. Omar Rabbi Yehuda Omar Rav. Rabbi Yehuda Omar Rav said, Eid Zomeim, the false witnesses, Mishalem Lefi Chelko. Each one pays according to his part of the damage. So that's a very cryptic statement. So now Gemara is trying to say, what does he mean by saying that? So my Mishalim Lefi Chelko, what does it mean that they pay according to his portion? So if you think, so what do you guys think it means? Before you go ahead, what do you think that line means? You read ahead. So Ilema, if it means the high Mishalim Palga, the high Mishalim Palga, let's say each eight Zomim pays his part of the damage. In other words, let's say, for example, they lied and said this guy stole $500. And Beis Din said he was convicted of having to pay $500. He had not yet paid it, but he was convicted. Now they catch these guys as liars. So what do they do? So what do you mean to say? They each pay their part. Each one pays $250.
Right.
Which would make a lot of sense. They wanted collectively to make the guy lose $500. Mm-hmm. So collectively they lose $500. So is this the statement that Rab Yehuda Amar Rav, who is an Amora, is this what he is enlightening us to? That's a little bit of a problem, because Tanina,
about a murder or something like that. Each,
well, he's not talking about that. He's not talking about that's what he's saying. The palga of that. Hold on, Tanina. But the truth of the matter is, we learned that very statement in a Mishnah 2 pages from now on. Hamad Aleph says the very exact thing on a Mishnaic level. And what does it say? It says the following. The Mishnah says, "Mishalshalin b'mamon, ve'ein mishalshalin b'malkus." You divvy it up by monetary issues, but you don't divvy it up by malkus, by lashes. And the Mishnah there explains exactly what we said: that if the guys lie about money, they divide up how much they pay till you come to the total amount. But we don't divide up lashes. Let's say they falsely swore. Let's say three, it can be three witnesses too. It can be two, three, it can be the same amount. Let's make the math easy. Let's say three witnesses lied that this guy deserved a punishment that deserves lashes. They find out they're liars. So we think, okay, they want to give him 39. We'll give each one 13.
Yeah.
No, that you don't divide up. Each one gets 39 lashes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Alright? So that's the same thing for death. You see, you can't do half a death.
Right.
We kill them all halfway. You can't kill them halfway. You kill them all, right? But so the submission expressly said this idea already. So that cannot be what Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav meant when he said the words "Eid Zomi Mishalim Lefi Chelko." He pays according to his portion. It can't mean that, because the Mishnah has already told us that. So we got to figure out another meaning of what Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav meant when he said, an Eid Zomim pays his portion. Okay? So let's see what it is. Ella, let's say like this. Kegon, the Itzum Chadminayo. Let's say like this. That two witnesses lie, and let's say they both lied that this guy was $500, and then two more witnesses come, but they don't refute both of the first witnesses, they refute one of them. They say, how could you have testified you were in Chicago? The other guy, we have nothing, we don't know about this guy at all. But you know you're out. Okay, so now what have you proven?
Now it's
that
out.
One guy is a liar, right? Yeah. He's for sure a liar. Both you didn't prove. Now the two together wanted to make the guy lose $500. So what are we going to do? Well, you're the liar, so pay $250. Is this what he meant to teach us? Now that would be a chiddush to what the other Mishnah said. The other Mishnah said when we find them both as liars, right, they share the cost. What would it be if only find one to be the liar? Maybe he means to say that if one is found out as the liar, you make him pay half, or whatever the percentage is, depending on how many witnesses will be there. So that's what it says. I'll read that again. Ella Kagon, let's say maybe Rabbi Yehuda Merav is referring the itosam chad minay. One of the two becomes an eid zomeh. The mishalim pal gadidei. And he pays his half. Maybe that's what he means. No, we can't say that either. Why?
Because how can
umi mishalim, how can he pay? Vatanya, there's a brisa in Maseches Tainis says the following golden rule. Ein eid zomeh mishalim mamen ad shi zomu shneim. An eid zomeh never pays money until both witnesses have been discredited. That's the rule. You don't have to know why, but that is the golden rule. It's both or nobody. So it's never going to be possible to have one guy being a zomeh without the other. The Torah is saying you have to do to the two of them. The Torah says both liars are proven liars. Then you do to both of them what they wanted to do. Right? The fact that you discredited one, it's like Xeris HaKosos, doesn't matter. You got to discredit both. So it's never going to come out a case where one guy pays because he was the Zomim, the other one not. If you don't get both, then nothing happens to either one. That's a rule.
Double or nothing.
Can't argue with the rule.
So nobody pays.
Nobody pays.
There's only one witness.
Conviction doesn't happen either because you're down to one witness. Right. Two witnesses lied, and the business, he's got to pay 500. He hasn't yet paid. Now we've picked apart one witness and said you weren't there. So now that the double testimony falls. That falls. But we don't do to them as they wanted to do because you got to knock both of them out. So it comes out paying the what do you call it? The victim, whatever, the guy who was charged doesn't pay. But they don't pay either because we didn't discredit both of them, and without discrediting both of them, that's a serious accusation. You don't do it.
So, Rabbi, if there were three lying witnesses and one,
so that's a whole thing. It's a whole complicated area. Usually, three go together. Three, you got to knock all three out. We're going to learn about it. Okay, so we're still stuck. We don't have an interpretation for Rav Yehuda Merav. We don't have a workable interpretation. What does it mean that an eid zomim pays his portion? It can't mean when both are zomimim, where he learns in the Mishnah. It can't be when one's a zomim because it doesn't happen when one's a zomim.
Well, let's say one guy's the instigator and the other guy's going along.
Doesn't matter. Then they're both
50-50.
No, that's like the Mishnah already. They're both the same guilty, two guilty guys. The Mishnah already later on said, two pages later, you pay half. So we're stuck. So Amar Rava. So Rava says, okay, I'll give you an interpretation for Yehuda Merav. Amar Rava, but Omer Edus Sheker He Aditi. Like this. One, we have two lying witnesses, and what we have is one of the two witnesses says, I want you to, and let's say they said the guy's guilty, or whatever, yeah? And now the one guy goes to the court and says, I want you to know, I lied.
This has been done before.
I lied.
No guilty.
I lied.
Just about himself.
I didn't tell the truth. I wasn't here. I admit that I lied.
Conscience.
So now, that's not really, you don't have other two witnesses disproving one of the two. You don't have that. So, maybe when the guy himself says he lies, then he should pay half. So, notwithstanding all the questions you may have, the Gemara knocks it off right away with a very simple question. He says, Kol Kamina, can this happen? We have a rule. Kivin Shehigid Shuv Enochozer Mag. It's a rule in testimony. It's a great rule. Once you testify, you can't change your mind in court. Once you make a testimony, you can't go back and say, you know, I'd like to change what I said.
Yeah.
You know, you can't go back and retestify. So it's never possible for a guy to come back and say, I lied. I don't want to get into the details of that.
Is this the same as what we said before about it going to another court and admitting that you...
No. Going to another court is something, we haven't gotten to that yet. We haven't discussed that yet.
Right.
We'll have to explain that. But this is, once you testify in this court, you can't testify anymore. You get your one chance.
Right.
We don't say, I'd like to recall a witness, you know, or the guy says, I want to append what I said. I thought I said, no, you got to tell the truth. You remember, you're made an oath on a Sefer Torah. We assumed you understood what you said the first time. And that's what you're stuck with. So therefore, this whole answer can't begin. Because once you say, you can't then have to say, well, I lied. We don't accept that anymore. Inadmissible testimony.
But he has to go to another court.
So now we have to come with another answer. Okay, so we had three rounds so far. Still no solution. Round four. Ella be'omer, like this. This guy comes to another court. And he says the following. Hey, Adnu, I want you to know that me and another guy, we testified falsely for who zamnu bebeis dimploni, and we were made edim zomamin in another court. Right? And we were supposed to pay. And the bezin said we have to pay. I've run away. And I'm telling you, I admit that that's what happened. And therefore, since I'm admitting, I don't have to pay.
Pretty sneaky.
So,
How do you pay proportionate share in that case?
Well, because he's willing to pay half. He's willing to pay half.
But it's a knas at that point, right?
Well, so Nagmar says, so come on, who would that be like? So he says, the loker, Rabbi Akiva, it couldn't be like Rabbi Akiva, because the eek Rabbi Akiva, because according to Rabbi Akiva, what happens if you admit?
You don't pay any.
Oh, now you know why it's connecting back to Rabbi Akiva right now? Rabbi Akiva says, the eek Rabbi Akiva, ha'amar, Rabbi Akiva says, af ena mishama piyasu. You don't pay based on what you admit. So, who is this again? What's his name? Rava, was it? I don't know who it is. The fourth answer is saying, what was the case? Remember, what are you trying to figure? Let's go back. Rav Yehuda Marav said, it's possible that an aged zomim pays his part. We're trying to figure out how does that happen.
Right.
So now we're saying, this guy comes to another court. He says, I was in a previous court with another guy. We lied. We made the guy guilty. The bezin said he's going to have to pay. Then we were proven liars. And they said that we have to pay. And now I'm going to this court and I'm admitting it.
That doesn't make sense. He's already proven that he lost.
Maybe I said a little too much. He said, we were made zomim in another court. But the other court didn't yet say we were guilty.
Oh.
Okay? I'm jumping to the final answer.
How can you be zomim without being guilty?
Yeah. Again, what happened was Reuven and Shimon went to court. They lied about Levi. Said he owes $500.
Right.
Okay? Mm-hmm. Bezin pronounces Levi has to pay $500. Now, two other witnesses come and say, Reuven and Levi, you weren't in town.
Right.
So now, Reuven, that's what they said. The Bez Din had not yet pronounced that the first two witnesses have to pay the money.
Right.
So now, so he doesn't know anything yet. He runs to another court. He says, I want you to know, me and my buddy, we're Zolman. Where's your buddy? I don't know where he is. He denies it. Whatever. But I'm telling you, I owe it. Oh, so that'll be the case where a guy will pay his part. That's the case where he pays his part. To which the Gemara says it can't be, because according to Rabbi Akiva, that's a motive of knas, and you don't pay.
Right.
So that's how this Gemara relates back to the Rabbi Akiva Gemara. So that answers out. So the final answer was just, okay, we're getting close, and we just gotta tweak this last answer, and we'll get to what we want. And the final answer is the one that's the keeper. Okay, Ella, so let's say like this. But Oimer, he says the following. Hey Adnu, he comes to the second court. And he says, back at the first court, what happens? We testified. Fuzamnu bebeis dimploni, and we were made zomamim. And here's the extra thing. Fechuivainu mamon, and we were obliged to pay.
They've already been convicted.
So now, if he comes to this court now, another court, and admits, is he admitting to a fine? When do we say the rule that motive of knas, like Rabbi Akiva or anybody, is potter, is if you give information that wasn't known yet?
Yeah.
Okay? Mm-hmm. For example, if you're a guy who steals, right? Mm-hmm. And if you're caught by a court, you'll have to pay double, right? What if you are convicted in another court already, and they say you have to pay double? And then you run to another court and say, I want to admit. No, I want to admit that I stole. They said, thank you very much. You've been convicted some already.
Yeah.
So once you're convicted, there's no rule of motive at knas. Admitting a knas is potter. So that's the case here. He's saying one more point. He's saying, I testified, I lied. A bezin said we were zomamim. And on top of that, they came to the conclusion that we were, and they said we had to pay. Once the other bezin says he has to pay, your confessions don't help anything.
Yeah.
At that point, you might be motive, but it's not on the knas that hasn't come. It's on the knas that's there already. You haven't helped the court. It's like plea bargaining. Yeah. Motive knas is a form, not exactly, but it's a type of plea bargaining. Yeah. In other words, I'll admit what I did already. Let's not go through the court process. So, okay, since it's a fine anyway, we'll waive the fine, and you're saving us the headache. Yeah. But once it's a guilty conviction, then you haven't helped us any. So even according to Rabbi Akiva, it would still work because you've already been convicted. Yeah. So that is the case. Clear? That's the case to what Rabbi Yehuda Rav said. Eid Zomim Misham Lefichalko. And Eid Zomim pays according to his portion. What's the Chiddush? What's the insight? Let's close it off. So Sal Kedarech Me'ay Mayna thought. Kivan De Lachavre Lo Matzimichayv. Can he make his friend pay? He can't make his friend pay because he's not believed to make the other guy pay. He's just one witness. Let's say the other friend is there with him in this other city, in this other court. Okay? And the guy says, you know, this could be miles away from the other court. It's not like, oh, why don't you send the facts and find out? You know, it's like, you can't find this stuff out, right? Whatever, it's far away. You got Philistines in the middle. You know, you just can't go. This guy walks up to Bez in one side and says, I want to tell you a whole story. Me and my friend, and there's my friend here. He's here. We were in another court, it was 10 years ago. It's been 20 years ago, right? And that whole court, and there was, the Palestinians came, and the police came and destroyed that whole city 5 years ago. So they're not gonna have any records, okay? I'm trying to give you a case where you say, well, why don't we, right? So they want you to know, we were convicted of, Eidim Zomim to pay $500. So I'm willing to pay, me and my buddy. I said, what about you, buddy? What do you say? Never happened. I don't know who the guy is. Right? So now what happens? Can the first guy's testimony make the second guy pay?
No.
He's one witness. He's nothing. The guy's not admitting.
So
I might have thought, since your testimony can't make the other guy pay, maybe you can't pay either. So the chiddush is, you still pay, which is a very interesting point. We're not accepting his testimony if the other guy pay. It's kind of a negative, right? We don't believe him to make the other guy pay, but we'll believe it for you to pay, but it's still not considered moda biknas. It's not considered admitting a fine, because you're saying another court already convicted you. Let's just read the last line and a half again. So, salka da'ach min aymein a thought, kivin de lechav relo matzi mechayvli. Since he can't make his buddy pay, because that's not enough testimony. It's one guy's testimony. He can't make the other guy pay. So I might have thought, Ihu nami lo machayv, he too should not pay. Kamash malon, that's the whole chiddush to say that no, an Eid Zomim does pay his half in this kind of a case.
Why wouldn't the Beis Din say, what are you doing here? Go back to the place.
Let's say the police destroyed it. Whatever, they're all dead. I don't know. I don't remember where it is. Doesn't whatever. It's the theory, Sam.
Does that mean that only the half?
But you don't think that could happen? What if a guy comes today and says, "I want you to know, in a Krakow court in 1930, me and this my old friend were Adam Zoom. go find the Krakow court now."
Why would they have to go?
What does he gain?
He has a guilty conscience. He was hired to pay $250. The Beis Din said they were.
So why didn't he pay it?
He ran away. He was a terrible guy.
He had money.
He was doing tshuva. You ever heard of tshuva?
Just go back to the old court.
Now he's got money.
He's gone. They destroyed it. Whatever. Don't ask those kind of questions. We're just trying to give you the craft, the law. Don't say we're not here to solve problems. We're here to create problems. we're here to define the laws. Just to know what is the law. That's what you really need to know. What is the law? Let him go back. The court's not there. That's all. Simple answer. It was 75 years ago.
But you're trying to craft a case where Amar Rava works.
And that's how it works.
Yeah, but it's
that's the only case that would work.
It's not likely that the guy's court just blew up and then all of a sudden he's not able to go back there and just pay.
I don't know. You know, I guess you don't know a lot of your history. You know, we lived under Roman control for hundreds of years. Romans walk in one day, just destroy a city. Goodbye. It's gone. You know, you're used to being in Canada. Wait till the day comes where the Muslims come and knock out Thornhill in 5 minutes, and you'll understand these halachas, lo aleinu. The Jews, it was like, you know, we prayed for the welfare. There's reasons we have a lot of prayers, because, you know, one fine day, a bunch of Cossacks come, and we wipe out this city. Boom, it's gone. It's off the map. Finished. This was not an unusual scenario in Jewish history, Howard.
My mom didn't think it could happen in Hungary.
I'm just saying, it's not unusual. So you're hard to crap. And then, you know, the guy's the older man. He has charot. He wants to do tshuva. Yeah. And he realizes, oh, it was a terrible thing I did.
I'm still unclear, Rabbi, about the other witness. Does he get...
The other witness isn't doing any tshuva.
And he doesn't have to pay because he's only one witness.
Right. That's right. You say that. I don't agree. You can't make me pay anything. So even though you can't make one guy pay, you can pay.
I would think the chiddush should be what you might have thought, which is that he couldn't pay if he hadn't obligated the other guy. I mean, if the guy comes in and says, I want to pay, I'm guilty. I did this. Yeah. I want to pay.
Yeah.
And you say, no, you
but
can't
what he's really pay, saying, what he's really saying is we're both guilty.
Yeah.
The guy is saying me and him are both guilty.
It was a conspiracy. That's the whole
idea.
So
now the court says, wait a minute, what do you say? Oh, I don't know the guy. So now your testimony can't make him pay, right? For sure can't make him pay.
Still want
to, so now that your testimony is inadmissible for him, maybe it's inadmissible for yourself.
You're only one witness against the other
even
guy.
Even for yourself. It's kind of an odd law. How can we make you pay for not making him pay?
That's my point. That's the chiddush.
That's what the Gemara says. That's what I read. That is the chiddush. No, even though we don't make him pay, he still pays. That's the chiddush.
But if he admits it, doesn't he get off now?
Because he's not admitting to a knas that wasn't fined. It was already fined.
He was found to be
motive knas is putter before the Bezdin decides your chayiv. Once a Bezdin decides your chayiv, we don't apply motive knas.
So this is like the opposite of the Fifth Amendment. You can essentially convict yourself, but you can't convict the other guy.
Well, you're sort of.
You weren't convicted, but...
Right, exactly. But see, it's not like the third answer where he said a problem is once you testified, you can't testify again. Because you're not in the same court.
But he can say, look, I ran away, I was convicted.
So he admits that he pays.
That's right.
And so you can essentially reconvict yourself.
That's right.
Coming clean.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, this was the easy Gemara. Now we're going to come. The Mishnah is easy. Now, this is a good example, guys. We're going to see. When there's a lot of words on a page, you should know, as a general rule, when you have a page with a lot of words, that means Gemara is easy. Because it's explaining itself. When you got a Gemara with two lines, and then you see Rashi and Tosfos are half a page, you know, this is very hard stuff. That's a general, I remember one time I was in Yeshiva, first time, the whole page, I don't have a page like this here, the whole page was one line.
And then
was one line. Yeah. And then, all that is Tosfos, you know. So when you're in grade 5 and 6, you didn't learn that. And he said, oh boy, this must be easy. Oh, the Rebbe said, oh, it's so hard. We're going to be in this for weeks. This one line. Because you don't know what it means because it's so cryptic. Yeah. You know what it means. So we're going to have, the Mishnah is easy, but the Gemara is challenging. All right, let's look at the Mishnah now. We're going to craft another type of scenario. Where how do we deal with the Edim Zomimim over here? So, before we begin, let's do a little bit of introduction. And I even have it.
It's another reason you know it's hard when the rabbi gives an instruction.
All right, so just, I hope I divide it up evenly. We're going to read a little bit inside here just to get some general ideas. I want to overload you with an overabundance of information that you just sink in it. Okay, thanks. Did Oren get one?
You need one more.
I made 15 copies.
We got more.
Did Oren get one yet?
I got one yet.
Okay. Okay, we're now going to move into a topic everybody's got?
Yeah.
About a woman's ksuva. Okay, here. So let's just read what it says. There's some terms over here. One is called ksuva, nichse tzon barzel, and nichse meluk. These are terms you should learn before you leave this planet. You should know these terms. So let's just read it. Ksuva. When a man marries a woman who was a basula, a virgin, at the time of her kiddushin, of her marriage, he must write her a ksuva document in which he promises that she will receive 200 zuz, which is the value of 960 grams of silver. How much a gram of silver costs now?
An ounce is 15 bucks. So it's... an ounce is 30 grams.
Not a lot.
It's like 30 times. All right. 30 times 15. 3 times 100. About 450 bucks today.
Okay. All right. Anyway. So 200 zuz from him or his estate if he divorces her or dies. Right? You write the ksuva that if I die or divorce, you got 200 zuz coming to you somewhere from my estate. Okay. When a man marries a widow or a divorcee who had once been married in the past, in other words, she was a nesua and was not just an arusana, they were married, a real, she was under the chuppah with another man. And this writer, Ksuva Dakin, which she promised she will receive 100 zuz from him, or his estate if he divorces her or dies. Okay. Even if the woman is still a virgin from the first marriage and never consummates, still, the woman is classified as a ba'ula with regard to the amount of her ksuva because she was once married and is not going to... Okay, fine. Anyways, you got a ksuva, either 200 or 100. Point number one. Next. Now, what happens if a woman has a dowry? Her parents gave her a dowry that she should bring into the marriage. Mm-hmm. What happens to the property or the animals or the dowry stuff she has? Right. So we don't have the wife just, you know...
You mean if a divorce happens?
No. We're getting married. First, we're getting married.
Okay.
First, I know what happens when you get married. Then we can understand what happens in divorce.
Okay.
What's the Arusha, by the way?
A who?
Inheritance.
Oh, no. Arusha?
No.
Arusha means engaged. Now, at the time the husband writes the ksuva, or any point afterwards, the husband may designate, this is nothing else, a parcel of land towards the collection of the ksuva. That's another point. In other words, he's got to pay the ksuva. Now, where's he going to pay it from? Now, the rabbis don't want guys to be smart and says, you know, I have no assets. And when he dies or divorces, everything's in another name. Mm-hmm. You know, I put it in somebody else's name. No, I say, no. I want to know, you got $200 ksuva, 200 ksuva? What's it up against?
Does it put it in trust?
Not in trust, but what piece of property is collateral? You own
collateral.
Land, mister. There's got to be a piece of property that is put up against that thing. So if you don't pay her the 200 zoos, we take that property.
Right.
Now, that's very important because that means he can never really sell that property.
Yeah, we've talked about
that. That's a piece of property he's got to hang on to. Yeah. So that's what it says. The husband may not sell the land that he designated for such a purpose as long as he is married. But he's permitted to cultivate it and collect its fruits, of course, as long as the property's there. Now, if the wife dies during the husband's lifetime, then the husband is once again permitted to sell the land because there's no ksuva up against it. If the husband dies during the wife's lifetime, or if he divorces his wife, the wife may collect her ksuva either by cash or by taking title of the designated land. All right, that's pretty clear?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's pretty clear. All right, now, next point. Now we come to two new terms, nichsei tzon barzel and nichsei malug, which means a woman brings into her marriage two types of possessions as follows. Number one, possessions that the wife owned before marriage, the values of which were estimated and written in the ksuva to be returned to her in full upon divorce or the husband's death. In other words, let's say she has a piece of land. So what she says, listen, I have a piece of land that says it's worth $5,000. And, you know, we're married and I'm happy that, you know, you should work on it and use it and all this stuff and all this. But it's a $5,000 piece of land. And I don't care, you know, I just want to know that I've put $5,000 into this marriage account. And if you die or we get divorced, I don't have to get the land back. I want $5,000 back. Okay, that's what I put into the marriage, and this is what I come out. That's called nichsei tzon barzel. Literally mean iron flock properties. In other words,
sounds like the name of a company.
In other words, nothing can happen to it. It's $5,000 guaranteed, as opposed to what the next one's going to be, because their value does not change between the time of marriage or the time of divorce or the husband's death. Where she says, I put in a $5,000 property. You use it, do what you want. I don't care about it. One thing, you put into the ksuva. Put into the ksuva. There's $5,000 worth of nichsei tzon barzel. So now, if there's a divorce, you now have to pay 200 zuz plus the $5,000 tzon barzel. And you can be sure there's got to be a piece of land put up against that too.
Right.
There's got to be a piece of land put up against that too. Or the guy will claim, I don't know. I don't have any money. Mm-hmm. Right? So that is part of the ksuva. In other words, the ksuva, the first part of the ksuva, is just the marriage agreement, what he will pay as a husband to a wife. And then she's brought property in, and if he dies or gets divorced, she gets to take that value out. No interest, nothing, just take the value out. Then there's a third possession, another possession, that were not estimated, and the values were not specified in the ksuva. In other words, she has another piece of property. She says, listen, this is my piece of property. It's always my property. What I'll let you do is you go work on it. You can get the money out of that. But it's always my property. There's nothing to discuss. You can never touch. You can never do anything with it. It's my property. Finished. As opposed to the first one, she says, I don't care. You can keep it. It's yours. I just want the money up against it. Right. Here, so this is called Nuchse Maluk. which means properties that are plucked. All right? So now it says, upon divorce of the husband's death, the property is returned as is, regardless of its appreciation or depreciation over the years. That's what it's called. Either it's called nechasim hanichnasim v'yotzim ima, property that comes and goes, or nichsei maluk, properties that are plucked. Because for the duration of the marriage, the husband may pluck the produce of these possessions. However, he may not use up the property itself. Notice he can't dig trenches in it. He can't, slaughter. If, let's say, it's an animal, he can't slaughter the animal. So that, now that second type of possessions has nothing to do with the divorce. In other words, to get divorced, very simple. Just give me back my property. That's nothing to do with the ksuva per se. You know, so we got three items. She comes in. Number one, she gets married. Number one, the guy's either giving her 200 or 100 zuz for getting married. That's in the ksuva. He's got to have a piece of land put up against that. Number two, she comes in with a valuable property worth $5,000. Says, listen, you keep it, you can have it if you want. I don't care to see the property again, but you write into the ksuva, if we get divorced, I get $5,000. Fine, he writes that in. He's got to designate another piece of property that's worth $5,000. She can have it. Then she comes in with another piece of property and says, this piece of property, I really like. I don't ever want to part with it. It's mine, always mine. This is mine. You can work on it. Then when they get divorced, he doesn't put anything up against it because it's always been hers. It's never changed hands. Okay, very good. So far, so good.
Yeah.
So now, let us now just look at the Mishnah. We're not going to do the Gemara. We'll just do the Mishnah now. All right, everybody got it now? Right? Mm-hmm. There's two Mishnahs. It's the first one. Right smack in the middle of the page. First word on the line. We got it? Now, very interesting case. Let me say it outside. What if two witnesses lie and say that this man divorced this woman? And the two witnesses say he divorced this woman. Okay? And he didn't pay the ksuva. Okay? So now, and then they find out that these guys are liars. Okay? So now what do we do with these guys? So what would you say?
They have to pay everything that he would have
to pay. So let's say the ksuva was 200 zuz plus 500 zuz for the field that she gave them. So and they said that you divorced, you never gave her the ksuva worth of 700 zuz, whatever. And so what do you think the law would be?
Fine him 700 zuz.
Fine him 700 zuz. Why?
We do to him what he was going to do to them.
Okay.
Had the testimony been held.
Now, is this something you can say for sure is what they've done to this guy? Have they merely made him lose 700 zuz?
No, someone's going to come and say you're false, so he won't have lost it.
No, I'm not saying that, but I'm saying that, but the truth of the matter is, you know, this is a lot different than every other case, because how do you know that the guy will never divorce his wife?
Oh, you mean the fact that he didn't divorce her yet?
What if the guy divorces the wife the next day? Then he'd have to pay the 700 zuz anyway. So, in other words, what the Gemara is saying is, you can't say that they for sure cheated him out of 700 zuz, you know, because he could turn around tomorrow and go and divorce her. And he would have paid the 700 zuz anyway. Do you have a guarantee? Now, if we knew for sure he never was going to divorce his wife ever, then we could say they were legitimately going to take $700 away from the guy.
Doesn't it happen if he dies as well? First?
Yeah, or the guy dies.
He's never going to die before her.
But no, maybe she can die before him.
I know, but you can't say he.
But anyway,
never
but
died
the before. Point being, this is not like other cases where they lied and said the guy stole $500, and now they want to take $500 away from the guy. That is clearly taking it away forever from him.
But he could steal after.
No, but he's not. But it's on a past case. It's on the past.
Right.
It's on the past. So they clearly stole $500 from him. And now, you know, if he'll do something tomorrow, that's a brand new thing. Has nothing to do with this. But here we're dealing with a ksuva that's sitting over here, and they're saying he didn't give the ksuva, and now he owes her 700 zuz. Now that could be true, but let's think about it. You know, once he's paid it out, you know, but what if he would divorce her tomorrow? Then he would have paid it anyway. So this isn't such a for sure thing that they made him lose. Maybe they really wouldn't have made him lose anything. So now you're stuck. So but what do? Do you not find him anything? But what if he doesn't divorce his wife? So now you're caught. Like, what is it we're supposed to do?
and they're making lots of trouble for him. You want to stop people from doing things.
Yeah.
What's the claim?
They claimed that this guy divorced his wife but never gave her the ksuva. And therefore, they're saying either you're paying the 700 zuz or that piece of property is going to get appropriated. The guy's saying, what are you talking about? I never divorced my wife. But no one's able to, he's not able to bring any witnesses. Let's say they're out of town. Again, let's say the husband and wife moved across the sea. And the guy's got a lot of money on him. And these two witnesses don't like the guy. And they say, listen, they go to a Jewish court. I want you to know. You see this man and his wife? He's already divorced her. He never paid her the ksuva. So you have to accept their testimony.
And you can't even reach the wife.
Well, let's say she's in it with them. Let's say she's in cahoots with them. And says, yeah, I guess he never paid.
It's going to be a divorce for sure.
Whatever. And one thing's for sure, he can't say he did pay because he's first denying that he divorced her.
When did you stop beating your wife?
You know what I'm saying? They know he didn't pay. They know he didn't pay because they know he didn't divorce her. They're lying. So obviously he didn't pay. So what do they want? They want to make the guy lose 700 zuz. Right? So we would normally would think to say, okay, now when two other witnesses said they're liars, what do we say? Okay, they got to pay 700 zuz because they made him lose 700 zuz. But this is a unique case because not necessarily so. Because what if he would divorce his wife next week? If he would divorce her next week, he would have paid the 700. So, but not to make him pay anything. How are you ever going to, you have to give him some kind of knas? So what do we do? That is the issue of the Mishnah. Okay, let's read the Mishnah now. Let's read it first. Me'idim, this is what they're lying. Me'idim anu es ish ploni. We testify against Mr. So-and-so. Shigiresh es ishto, that he divorced his wife. V'lo nasan lo ksuvasa, and did not give her a ksuva. Now, the Gemara adds the issue here. So, the Gemara, like, read in between lines. So what should they pay? V'halo bein hayom bein lamachor, so v'litin lo ksuva. Isn't it going to be that, you know, could be, won't it be that between today and tomorrow, one day he'll give her a ksuva? Right? Should they pay the whole ksuva? Maybe he's gonna die, or divorce her tomorrow, or the next day, and he's gonna give her a ksuva anyway. So it comes out they never made him lose any money! Right? But on the other hand, but they did a terrible thing, and what if he never divorces her? Oh. Then they did want to make him lose money. So the question is, well, what's gonna happen? I don't know. Like, we don't start researching, you know, their marital status, you know, how many fights have they had, what's the likelihood they're going to get divorced, you know, you can't do that. So it's very odd. If he will divorce her, then they didn't make him lose any money, right? If he doesn't divorce her, they would make him lose money. What's going to be? We won't know for another 30, 40 years. But we got to decide the case now. So what are we going to do? So the Gemara answers, Omdim, we make an estimation. Kama Adam, let me explain something to you. What if a woman is desperate for money? She ain't got no cash.
She got a loan out on the
table. What would she do? She does have what we call a promissory note. It's called the ksuva. Let's say the ksuva is written for 700 zuz. She needs cash. For whatever reason, she needs cash. Let's say she has a daughter from a previous marriage that's getting married, and the second husband doesn't want to give her any money. She needs cash. So go to the guy and says, listen, I need 300 zuz to make my daughter's wedding. So says, well, that's very nice. You got anything to back it up? Well, I'll tell you what I got. I got this ksuva over here. It's worth 700. Now, there's always a businessman around and says, okay, so what's it worth right now? Nothing. But my husband dies, you get 700.
Ketubah future.
Yeah, but wait a minute. What if you die first? I get nothing. That's right. So now how much are you willing to pay to take the risk of this business opportunity to put 300 down to maybe get 700 or nothing? So there is a price. There is a price, okay? Now obviously it's not going to be a high price. It's not going to be 80%. Not 50. It's going to be less than 50. It's like buying, selling bad debts, right? What do you call it? People
owe money. Debt.
You know, people owe money, so we'll sell you the rights to collect it, whatever. Yeah. So what does that go for? A low, 30% maybe. Now here it's not so bad because it's a 50-50 chance.
That's how old the guys are.
But let's think of it. 50-50. Either she dies or he dies.
And that doesn't even include...
Somebody's going to die. Somebody's going to die. We're going to come to resolution one way or the other. Either I get it all or I get nothing. So what would you be willing to pay to know that you have a chance to get triple your money, four times? It's way to some stocks, right? You invest, right? Henry takes $100,000 from somebody. It's going to be one of a few things. Either guy, but can't miss. It's going to be worth $500,000 or something. Sorry, it's worth nothing. But people do put money in for that, don't they?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's the same thing. Henry should go into Ksuba futures now.
It's better than 50-50. You know? Usually a man dies first, right?
Whatever.
And then you've also got divorce.
So now, what would that cost? What would that cost? That's the issue.
The risk.
Now, I've oversimplified the estimation. But the Gemara now says, the Mishnah says, Omdim, let's evaluate. Kama Adam wrote, say, Litin b'ksuvasa shalsu. How much would a man be willing to pay for this ksuva? Shimnis alma, that if she becomes a widow, oniskarsh, or she gets divorced, that he would collect the full, or v'imase, if she dies, then you should, and about her husband inherits her, and therefore there is no ksuva. Right. So that's the estimation. The next two lines of Gemara that we're going to do tomorrow says, okay, so now let's get to the real estimation. How do we estimate it? And there's going to be three answers to how to estimate it. And that's what the rest of the sheet is there for. Okay? But at least you have a certain amount of information, so you're not going to get totally overloaded. The next part is hard. But if you just go over the idea of ksuva, just read this over one or two times tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the idea. So now we'll give you three different ways to analyze what the payment is. It's just different ways of looking at the same idea. And once we get that, we move into Shemitah. Okay, have a good evening, and we will start the Rambam in 1 minute.